This is John Quinn, and this is Law Disrupted. And today we're going to be talking about law in Saudi Arabia and the reform and updating of the laws that are going on in that country. We're joined today by my partner, Nasser Al-Rubayeh, who's a Saudi qualified lawyer. I go to Saudi Arabia a fair amount. I've been going there for several years, and I have to say that in all my travels around the world, I think Saudi Arabia is perhaps the most exciting, dynamic, energized country that I visit. The people of Saudi Arabia really seem to share a vision, maybe specifically Vision 2030, which the Crown Prince has promoted about major changes and modernizing and sort of weaning the economy from fossil fuels and trying to make Saudi Arabia a tech center and a tourist destination. It's very, very exciting. Every time I go back to Saudi Arabia, there are remarkable changes. And part of the changes that are going on in Saudi Arabia relate to changes in the legal system, in the laws and the legal system, in part as an effort to promote foreign investment, in particular investment into the mining industry, which is really important in Saudi Arabia, into tech and life sciences industries of all kinds. So I think it'd be interesting to take a look and discuss with Nasser some of that modernization, and maybe we can begin by kind of a look back at, you know, historically or in the recent past, before these changes, what the legal system has looked like. And so let me begin by asking you, Nasser, would you describe the Saudi Arabian legal system as more of a common law-based system, what we think of is in terms you look at court decisions and the concept of stare decisis, or is it more of a civil law system? I mean, in that sort of great divide, which would describe how the Saudi system has been up to this point?
Thank you for the kind remarks. I agree that the Saudi economy is on an accelerated growth path.
Yeah, I think it's the fastest growing economy in the G20 at this point.
That's correct. That's correct. And Vision 2030 that was approved in 2016, as you know, is making the kingdom an attractive market, providing Saudi and global investors a platform to take advantage of current global trends. The kingdom has a strategic location and has the advantage of the availability of materials and low cost and stable energy for decades to come. We're witnessing a transformation of the Saudi economy, bringing on new sectors that I think will change not only Saudi, but also the region and even beyond. In the past, there was a great focus on investing in oil, gas, and chemicals, but that has changed. Now we see significant investments in the sectors of the future: biotech, education, logistics, and many others.
The backbone, what you have to have this kind of change and to have foreign investment, is a legal system that people will have confidence in, that investors know that if there are disputes, if they need to enforce their rights, that there will be a fair avenue for them to be able to do that. And that's the question I ultimately want to get to. But just to set this up, could you tell us about the legal system there? Is it more common law oriented, or would you say it's more civil law or code based?
Sure. I fully agree with the point that there is definitely a relationship between legal development and economic development. And to respond to your question, I think Saudi is not a civil law nor a common law jurisdiction. It has certain features that you would find in the common law jurisdiction and other features that you would find in the civil law jurisdiction.
What are the sources of law? What do you look to if you want to know what the law is that would govern a particular issue or dispute?
So we have the basic law of governance that's regarded as the constitution of the country.
That's a written constitution, not like the UK constitution, or apparently it's not written, down anywhere.
That's correct. It's written. And it provides in one of its articles that the constitution of Saudi is the Quran and Sunnah, which are the Sharia sources. So to summarize, I think the sources of law in Saudi, you have the Sharia, which consists of Quran and Sunnah, And then you have different laws and regulations issued by different government bodies in relation to different particular issues. Just to give you an example, we have the personal status law, which is part of the project that has been going on for some time now to codify.
What is personal status? What does that mean?
It discusses different legal issues, including marriage, inheritance, and other family issues.
Okay. All right. So you refer to Sharia law and then other laws and regulations issued by various government bodies. I mean, what is, for those who haven't ever heard of that or have heard of it but don't really know what it is, what is Sharia law and what are the sources of Sharia law? If you want to look up what the Sharia law says about a particular subject, what do you turn to?
We have two main sources. One is the holy book, the Quran, and it's regarded by Muslims as a complete, perfect, comprehensive book that discusses various matters, including legal matters. And then you have a second main source, which is the Sunnah, and it refers to the sayings and the actions of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And you have other sources, such as the consensus of the companions or the Sharia scholars in relation to a particular issue.
That's Sharia law, and I assume that what you referred to, those are all recorded in well-known books, religious and otherwise, that you can consult if you want to see what law governs a particular problem. And then you also have laws that are promulgated by various government bodies and regulations. Can you kind of just give us an overview of what those are, what the sources of them are, and maybe what they would cover?
So just to give you an example, you have laws in relation to procedural matters, if you like, such as the Saudi Companies Law that discusses how companies are formed, how to deal with corporate issues, how to appoint a board, how a board should be appointed, certain issues in relation to shareholders' rights. And then you have other laws that discuss substantive matters, such as the personal status law that addresses issues such as marriage issues, inheritance, and other family issues.
And I assume there must be also some codes related to commercial matters and contracts, the equivalent of what we have in the U.S., the Uniform Commercial Code governing sales or security interests. I assume that, but you tell me whether or not that's true.
Some of these issues that you just mentioned are codified, and some courts would rely on Sharia sources to decide them.
So I gather that there are statutes and regulations that govern companies or corporations or partnerships or different types of business organizations?
That's correct.
Are there particular laws or governing sort of contracts generally? I mean, if I have a contract issue, where do I go to find the answers?
There are different sources to that. So let's say we have a sales contract, whether a sales contract is binding or not, whether certain clauses in a sales contract are binding or not. Normally, we would resort to Sharia sources to determine that. But let's say whether a limited liability company can extend a loan, that issue is codified under the Saudi Companies Law. So it would depend ultimately on the issue that we're trying to determine. It could be an issue that's discussed and addressed in a particular statute or law, or an issue that has been addressed in different Sharia sources.
When you said that in the sort of dichotomy between civil law and common law jurisdictions, that the kingdom is kind of a in between, has elements of both, you know, what are the common law aspects of it? Is that more looking at traditional Sharia law or outside Sharia law? Also, do courts look at precedent and previous decisions?
The precedents at this stage are not binding, but they're persuasive. So courts would shy away from issuing a judgment that would contradict with a judgment that has been issued on the same matter. And also you have principles that have been issued by the Supreme Court and certain bodies within the Supreme Judicial Council. These principles are regarded to be principles to be considered in deciding cases. Some of these principles could be considered as binding, but generally speaking, as a general rule, the precedents are not binding, but they're persuasive.
What's the process by which new codes are enacted? I know, for example, there's a new mining law. It's a kingdom, after all, so there isn't an elected parliament. But what are the bodies which promulgate and the process by which a major new law that's going to govern the entire economy, the whole country, how that gets enacted or promulgated?
There are different procedures to issue laws in Saudi. One way to do it would be for a particular ministry that would be in charge of administering and enforcing the law to put something together. And that draft will be discussed with different government entities. And ultimately, if it's accepted, it will be issued by the Council of Ministers.
And what is the Council of Ministers?
The Council of Ministers is a governing body that consists of different ministers. Some of them are ministers of state, and some of them are ministers with ministries.
Suppose there's a conflict between the statutory law or the regulatory law and the traditional law, the Sharia law. I assume it sometimes must happen that something gets through this bureaucratic process and is signed off by the Council of Ministers. And then actually when there's an issue arises and it's challenged and it gets to court, it must happen that sometimes a creative lawyer will have an argument that, well, wait a second, this is inconsistent with fundamental Sharia principles. Will the court entertain an argument like that?
Well, John, let's start with the premise that Sharia principles are very clear, the main Sharia principles. The process to draft the law and to issue a law would go through a lengthy process where Sharia experts would be consulted, Sharia lawyers would be consulted as well. In theory, a lawyer may try to challenge a particular regulation on the ground of Sharia compliance. But I would say that it would be unlikely that a judge or a court would entertain that because of the lengthy process that particular law will go through before it's enacted.
Talking about these sources of law and codes, what have been the most recent developments in the kingdom in terms of modernizing the law that's applicable to various activities, particularly as it relates to trying to make the kingdom attractive to foreign investment?
As I mentioned in the beginning, there is definitely a relationship between legal development and economic development, and a strong correlation between law and foreign investment. And to promote foreign investments, I think one needs to examine and understand what foreign investors are looking for. And I think what foreign investors want is certainty, predictability, protection for their investment, and a fair return for their capital and investments.
What is the kingdom doing to promote those objectives in the legal sphere?
Since the approval of Vision 2030, a large number of laws have been amended and new laws have been introduced and enacted. And I think this is to make the KSA market more attractive, to make it a friendly destination for foreign investment.
What are some examples of those laws?
Well, one example of what has been done in terms of legal improvement and attempts to stimulate foreign investment would be the enactment of the Saudi mining investment law. I understand in preparing that law, the team that did the drafting worked closely with the World Bank to ensure that we would be following international best practice in mining. The law has created an environment that's welcoming, I think, to both Saudi and foreign investors by, for example, reducing administrative discretion, the bureaucracy, the obstacles to obtaining the required licenses. If you meet the requirements, which are now very clear, you get a license, whether you're a Saudi investor or a foreign investor. Another thing which is important is the fact that the law has clear timelines for the Saudi entities to respond to requests from investors. Because as you know, investors don't want to have to wait for a long period without a clear timeline. Also, the law or in practice, there is now an online system that enables investors to track their license applications and know where they are. And that promotes, I think, transparency. Of course, more work needs to be done in terms of enacting further regulations and laws. And also more work needs to be done in terms of promoting direct foreign investment in KSA. As you know, the Saudi market hadn't been on the radar of foreign investors for a long time. And only recently, the market unleashed the veil. You and I attended the last FII.
We should tell people what that is, the Future Investment Initiative, sometimes called, rather grandly, I think, Davos in the Desert, although it is a fantastic event. For those who don't know what it is, think of it as kind of like a Davos or a Milken conference, where you have business leaders, political leaders from all over the world. This last one, I think there were 400 or 500 different programs over a 3-day event.
You and I attended the last one, and it had a very positive energy. A lot of the people that we met expressed their appreciation to the potential opportunities that the Saudi market is offering. I think FII and many other Saudi investment events have been amazing opportunities to invite investors from across the world, across different sectors, to come and see for themselves what opportunities exist in the Saudi market.
We've been talking about sources of law. Let's talk about the judiciary and the forums for resolving disputes. Have there been changes and reforms in that area as well?
There have been huge efforts in terms of investing and reforming the judicial system. As you know, enacting new laws will have a limited effectiveness if these laws are not implemented and enforced. And it's crucial to have effective, impartial courts that will apply them. The Ministry of Justice has recently invested in terms of training judges, amending and developing procedures that would make court proceedings more efficient and practical. For instance, now the majority, if not all, of the services provided by the Saudi Ministry of Justice can be accessed online. There is a portal called Najis, where you can file cases, motions, enforcement applications. So there is no need anymore to appear before the court and submit documents. And that, of course, has made court proceedings more effective and efficient.
Are you saying you don't appear in court anymore? I know Saudi economy and the culture generally is very advanced. I'd say more advanced than the U.S. in terms of use of digital communication. But you're saying you never go to court anymore?
I wouldn't say never, but the majority, just to give an example, the majority of the cases are heard remotely now. Applications, as I said, are submitted remotely. You can access and monitor the cases that you're doing online. Some judges, some courts may prefer to hold hearings in person, but these are very limited cases.
Right. Well, that's been true in the U.S. too. We've been, I think, the pandemic and the education the profession has had in the availability of doing hearings remotely and arbitrations remotely has permanently changed the way law has practiced in the U.S. And I gather that's true in the kingdom also. But in terms of the structure of the courts, the types of courts there are, who the judges are, have there been some changes in that regard?
Just to give you some background to the Saudi judicial system, we have two separate judicial systems. One is the administrative judicial system, and the other one is the judicial system under the Ministry of Justice. The administrative judicial system has jurisdiction over cases where the government or government bodies are parties to these cases. Let's say if there is a case that involves the Ministry of Finance in relation to a service contract, that case would likely to be heard by the administrative judicial system, and it's called the Board of Grievances. But other cases are heard by courts under the Ministry of Justice, such as the General Court, the Commercial Court, the Criminal Court, and the Labor Court. And as you can see, we have specialized courts, unlike some other jurisdictions where judges take whatever comes off the docket, tort cases or criminal cases. You have specialized courts that hear particular cases. A criminal court will only hear criminal cases. The commercial courts would hear only commercial cases.
What are the backgrounds of judges? I know in many jurisdictions around the world, the career path to becoming a judge is very different than becoming a lawyer. I mean, in the U.S., a lot of times judges are practicing lawyers who have decided to do something different in their career, and they're either appointed or in some states elected, in the federal system, always appointed and confirmed by the Senate to become judges. But that's not true in a lot of countries. It's a totally separate career path to become a judge. What's the path in the kingdom?
So the path for someone to become a judge is to have a law degree and then to study at the Institute for Judges for 2 years, and then to shadow a judge for 2 to 3 years, and then to become a judge.
Do most judges have backgrounds as practicing lawyers?
No, most judges actually don't have any background practicing as lawyers.
Mm-hmm. And has there been an effort to upgrade the quality of the judges and the backgrounds of the people who are judges? Can you tell us a little bit about the changes in that regard?
There has been a lot of investment in training judges and providing judges with resources that would help them in hearing and deciding cases. I understand that judges now are offered courses here in Saudi and also overseas. There has been also a lot of efforts in terms of providing judges with more resources in terms of people who can help them in preparing cases and hearing cases.
You know, there's some countries in the world, many countries, that, you know, if you're a foreign investor and you get into a dispute with the host government entity, you know, the foreign entity or a state-owned enterprise, your chances of success are simply not very good. I won't name names, but there are some countries like that that are well known. It's extremely difficult to prevail in the court system. And for that reason, investors may protect themselves by providing for arbitration in London or Paris or Dubai or elsewhere, rather than subjecting themselves to the local civil justice system. And do you think a foreign investor, if they have a dispute with a Saudi state-owned entity, they can get a fair hearing in a Saudi court?
I think so. You know that part of my practice is representing international companies and corporations investing in KSA. We've won a large number of cases for foreign investors adverse to Saudi companies, just to give you one example.
But not just Saudi companies, but government-owned companies as well?
I don't think it would make a difference. Judges in deciding cases wouldn't consider the nationalities of the parties. And I say that from my experience.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the legal profession. You're a practicing lawyer in Saudi Arabia. Obviously, you must be qualified, the equivalent of what we say becoming a member of the bar of the state of California or New York. I mean, what does that look like? And are there particular specialized types of qualifications? If you want to practice tax law, for example, is there a separate qualification that you must get? Just as an example, the same question for different areas of practice.
Generally speaking, to become a lawyer, you need to have a law degree. And if you have only a bachelor's degree, you'll have to practice for 3 years. That period might have been reduced now. And if you have a master's degree, you'll have to practice for a year before getting your license to practice law. We don't have separate qualifications for separate fields of law.
Yeah. And that's in terms of the business of law practice. I know there are a number of international firms that have offices in Riyadh. And of course, there are local Saudi firms. I mean, how significant, from your observations, what's the impact of the international firms on the Saudi legal market for legal professional services Have they gotten significant market share? Do they joint venture with local firms? What generally is the relationship between them? Are there any observations you can make about the structure of the legal market?
I think there are two points here, John. In the past, international law firms were not allowed to have offices in Saudi. That has changed recently. I think that will have a positive impact on the market. I think international law firms, provided that they obtain the required licenses, will bring international perspectives. They will be important players in the market, both on the corporate side, on the transactional work, and also the dispute side.
All right, Nasser, this has been a very interesting conversation about modernization of law, the legal profession, legal process, and judiciary in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Thanks very much for joining us.
You've been listening to Law Disrupted with me, John Quinn. You can sign up to receive an email when a new episode drops at our website, lawdisrupted.fm. If you enjoyed the show, please share a link on social media and follow at JBQ Law or at Quinn Emanuel. Thank you for tuning in.
Well, wasn't that amazing? It was created and produced by Podcast Partners. They're really lovely people and rather good at all this podcasting guff. Find out more at podcastpartners.com.